Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable, episode 115, Iron Fist with Lots of Holes, recorded Tuesday, February 18th, 2014. On this week's episode, Shane Bailey, Britton Burton, and Nick Jones take a long look at the proposed NCAA rule changes. Is there a good rule or a way to punish good offenses? A great discussion you want to hear. Finally, a good basketball game occurred in the SEC, but too little, too late. And opening day of college baseball is discussed, including some creative scheduling by Mississippi State. All this and more on this week's SEC SRT. And welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable. This is your host, Shane Bailey, back for another episode of exciting basketball in the SEC. Just can't believe how great all these teams are in the SEC. That's why we do this podcast every 10 to 14 days as opposed to 7, because it's so good, the basketball in the SEC. But seriously, We've got a great show tonight. We are going to talk some basketball. I think Britton texted me earlier today. Britton Burton, welcome. It's been a little while.
It's been a while. Good to be back, as always, though.
But he's all excited. Football talk. We've got rule changes being proposed in SEC and college football, so we're going to talk that as well. And Nick Jones from Bama Hammer, welcome, Nick.
Hey, Shane. Britton, how are y'all?
I'm awesome. Good. And, of course, Nick's our Alabama writer down there, and he was braving the cold and the wet to watch a little baseball last weekend for opening pitch for SEC and really the nation in baseball. So we will touch on baseball, too. And I know Blair, if he was here, would be extremely happy that we said that at the beginning of the podcast, that we were going to talk about baseball. But we are SEC Sports Roundtable, a show that talks SEC, Southeastern Conference. We do talk football, basketball, and, as you just heard, baseball. We do that on a somewhat regular weekly basis. Like I said in my intro rant, that we'd like to do this weekly. It's just, we talked about this last week, me and Nick. It's just so hard to talk about bad basketball, to get on here and talk about such mediocre performances all across the board except for Florida. But we do our best, and so we'll delve into the week and a half of college basketball in the SEC. But we did have some exciting rule changes being proposed in football. Of course, football is the major drive for where we come from on this. But we do it a little bit different. We do it from a fan's perspective. My two other hosts tonight happen to be Alabama fans. I'm a Kentucky fan. We've got a Mississippi State, got some Tennessee Vol fans, have a Commodore fan or two. And we're not afraid to take sides on the issues and the programs and the teams. And so when we get that, you get what's real about the SEC, and that's what we like about this. But we're I think, pretty intelligent about some of the conversations we have. Sometimes we get a little one-sided, and folks like to tell us that we are, but you know, it's our opinions, and we like our opinions. But you can find us about anywhere you can find a podcast, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, anywhere an RSS feed's out there. We do a video version of this on YouTube as well. It's also on our website, SECSRT. We post all that, throw up some occasional polls. Love for you to go out and check out the website or our Twitter, SECSRT. Just look up those six little words anywhere on the Internet. And it can find the way that you can listen to us, find us best. So we appreciate you listening. We'll get right into things tonight. You want to go right into the rule changes, Britton? I know you're so excited about it. And I haven't even asked you beforehand, you know, are you so excited because Nick Saban is so for this 10-second rule, or that it's Nick Saban and you should be against it?
I have a lot of thoughts, so I'm hoping we'll spend a good bit of time on this. I am for some kind of change. I will say I don't know if this is the correct way to do it, and the player safety argument while I think there is some merit to it, in my opinion, that's not really the main concern. I've just been really surprised at how negatively major media and most fans on social media have reacted. And I'm going to get on my soapbox a little bit here, if that's okay.
It's what we're here for.
Okay. So the problem with the hurry up offense is that it's robbing football of one of the most elemental things about football that makes it beautiful and makes it the best game in the world. And that is that it's the only major sport where the offense and the defense basically have an equal chance for a successful outcome every single play. If you look at all the other major sports, basketball is the advantage is slanted towards the offense. A good team will shoot between 45 and 47% from the field, which is obviously less than 50. But when you add in defensive fouls and free throws and offensive rebounds, the number of successful outcomes for the offense is well above 50%. Obviously, soccer, baseball, and hockey, it's completely ridiculously slanted towards the defenses in terms of successful outcomes on each play. You know, the classic example, a great Hall of Fame baseball player fails two-thirds of the time at the plate. With football, traditionally, that has not been the case. Each team has basically an equal shot to win the play every single play of every single game, outside of certain circumstances. With the hurry-up trend, it has skewed that so much towards the offense that I think saying it's a 60-40 proposition in favor of the offense is being conservative. I think it would be closer to 65 or 70% in favor of the offense. And so, again, I'll say I don't know that this is the way that the change should come, but to me, defense is just as much a part of the game and just as much a part of why football is great. And the way offenses are running right now, it's just taking defense out of it, and it's more about putting your offense back on the field and outscoring them, and maybe occasionally you get a lucky defensive stop here. So that I'll start with that. I've got a lot more content to cover, but I don't want to spend the whole podcast talking, so I'll start off with just that.
What do you think, Nick?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I kind of stray alongside Britain. I don't have the answer, and I think something does need to be done, but at the same time, you know, there's an argument to be made that so many times there's been offensive developments. You see the wishbone, and then you go to the West Coast-style offense. There's so many different aspects to do the same thing, right? I mean, it's a pretty simple objective. You want to, you know, cover the most yards. You want to score touchdowns in football, and we've seen that done very differently over the past, you know, even 20, 15 years, especially with the rise of the spread offense. And I don't know if this is the answer. And I guess, should we explain it for those that don't know, like the proposed rule change?
Yeah, why don't we do that?
Yeah, so and I may get this completely wrong, but the NCAA, you know, they meet each year, kind of post, you know, after the season to discuss, you know, what. It's the NCAA Football Rules Committee, and that's another thing, is it's composed of coaches and athletic directors and some other people, just representatives from universities, and they come up. I know Tommy Tuberville was big on this when he was at Auburn. He was one of the lead guys. But essentially they review the rules. They say, hey, is there anything that we can do to make football better, safer, possibly more efficient, more balanced, like we're talking about. And they really brought up two main things this year. And, of course, one of them was a revision to the targeting penalty that came up last year. And this is something, you know, obviously that was a huge deal. We saw it a ton of times, especially against Alabama, a lot of other teams going through that. And essentially they're proposing for that rule change that the penalty can also be overturned along with the ejection of the player. And as we saw last year, the ejection could be overturned, but not the penalty. So anyway, but back to the 10-second rule, 10-second runoff rule. What they're saying is essentially for these hurry-up style offenses, or really to limit them and you know, Nick Saban and Brett Bielema being two of the main guys saying this is for player safety, is that is it the line judge? Is that who stands over the ball, or the head official? Do you guys know? I don't really remember, but
it's not the head official.
Anyway, the official that stands over, yeah, the umpire. That's it, I think. So he can stand over the ball for 10 seconds to let both teams get set up, and then also that would enable the defense to be able to sub even if the offense didn't. You know, that's made to slow down the pacing of a spread-style offense like Auburn, who's going to want to get to the ball and snap it. So that's essentially what we're talking about, but that could have been much simpler. But anyway, so there we go.
I think it's horse monarchy. I mean, I don't have the data in front of me, but I mean, there's such a small percentage of plays that are even hiked within the first 10 seconds that this really becomes a moot point to have this rule in place. I think it's silly. I mean, because most teams aren't even snapping the ball there. And if they are, it's in the last couple minutes of a game where time is of the essence and you need every second you can to try to score. You're down by two touchdowns and you're running the 2 minute drill. You don't have that 10 seconds on six plays is another minute. You don't have that to sit there and wait. So that's just silly to have that rule in place. It's just going to ruin that excitement that you get at the end of a football game when you have that possibility of a comeback win. I mean, look at the Georgia game last year where they almost pulled it out. If they had to wait 10 seconds every time before they could even snap the ball, it would be very difficult. And on top of that, if you had the umpire there and stand over the ball, if you wanted to snap it, you couldn't snap it as soon as the 10 seconds was up. He's got to get up out of the way and get in position, then everybody's got to get down. You're talking another at least 3 seconds, to more likely 5 to 8 seconds before they're in place and ready to snap the ball. That's generally what you see happen. So now all of a sudden the play clock's half the way down anyways. If you watch the spread offense and the way they run the ball, it shouldn't be a matter of the players on the field being worn out and tired because they're sitting there waiting for them to call the play 7 different ways and snap the ball with 5 seconds left to go in the play clock anyways. They're just keeping everyone on the field. I think that's just ridiculous for them to throw that rule out there.
Well, I'm glad you went there because that's one of the main arguments I've heard against it. But I honestly think that's the beauty of the rule. The fact that it's a 10-second sub period, if you will, doesn't really prevent fast-paced teams from snapping it any faster or slower than they have been. But what it does, and teams like Auburn are classic examples of this, and Oregon, without any kind of rule in place, they sprint up to the line of scrimmage, they line up, they may not snap it until 20 seconds have run off, but the very threat that they could snap it not only prevents the defense from subbing, but it completely takes all the gamesmanship out of the defense's hands. They can't show false looks. They can't run safeties up and then drop them back because they're going to show them blitz and then drop into coverage. Everything that the defense can do to disrupt what the offense does is taken away because just the mere threat of the snap, even if the snap isn't going to happen. Now, if you've got 10 seconds, which, and it's a good point, it may be more like 12 or 13 because that umpire has to get back. Now the defense can play ball again and not just be vanilla and hamstrung. What do we always say sucks? Well, there's a lot of things that suck. But one of the things that sucks about preseason NFL football is it's vanilla defense. They're running cover 3, cover 2 all game long. That's what college defenses are having to do because they can't even get set in time to line up correctly against these hurry-up teams.
Yeah, and, you know, Britton, that is a very interesting thing to say because especially, I don't know about Auburn's offense now. You can, you know, we can go back and watch the tape and things, but the Tony Franklin, back when he was at Troy and then came to Auburn, you know, he was one of the pioneers of the spread offense, per se. And it's kind of interesting, we joke about this all the time, especially with Gus Malzahn, but this is a system that's, for the first time in, you know, NFL or in college football history, it's actually worked its way up from the high school ranks instead of from the trickling down from the NFL like most things do. But you're exactly right, is most of the time you see the offense get to the line, and then they don't do anything. You see every single, you know, the offensive line doesn't even set. They look up. They look to the sidelines. You've got Oregon with those, you know, weird posters with all the different play calls, and then you've got Auburn, you know, looking over with three or four signal callers and everything else. And a guy I know down here in Birmingham, he was actually our offensive coordinator at high school. He's kind of in this, and he does a lot of, consultation and things for the spread offense. And he would actually attest that, and he did this year, that what he calls a like a jailbreak huddle or something like that. And you see Auburn do that every once in a while. Well, they actually huddle and they get to the line and snap it really quick instead of, you know, the traditional looking over to the sidelines is more effective, you know, and that's what really gets the defense off, because you've got a play call and you're to the line within 10 seconds and you're actually hiking the ball. But you're right. And this is an interesting thing. I just wanted to throw this out there. We were talking about very rarely does an offense snap the ball within 10 seconds. Brett McMurphy over at ESPN had two tweets that were pretty interesting, and I've got this one in front of us. He actually said that Auburn would only have been penalized once or twice, depending on, you know, it was a really close call, obviously, in the national championship game. But this one stuck out to me, that Oklahoma ran six plays against Alabama in the Sugar Bowl that would have been penalties. And, you know, we don't think that's, you know, we're thinking of Auburn, we're thinking of Oregon, we're thinking of Hugh Freeze at Ole Miss with this rule. And, you know, I mean, that's six penalties is a lot for this rule, especially within 10 seconds, you know. So with Oklahoma, too, which was just that just kind of stuck out to me.
But it's because most of these hurry up offenses, you see, they get to the line and they don't hike the ball. They'll get down, they'll make a play, they'll look for 5 seconds, then they'll get out of that formation, look back up and catch another play, and all of a sudden 20 seconds is ran off and everybody's caught their breath. And from that standpoint, you know, the safety feature to me is a null point, because that's the main area of confrontation is safety, because the players are getting gassed, but they're not getting gassed. They're able to sit there and catch their breath. Now, to your point, Britton, they might not be able to run the plays they would like to on the defensive side because they don't know what's coming. But that has nothing to do with player safety. That has something to do with scheme and how well you can perform what plays you've called against the offensive set. It has nothing to do with the player safety, which is the main argument you're hearing. If you want to have the argument and make the rule change, you need to have the rule change to stand for something that it really is. Not something that's fabricated and not true.
Right. Now, and I agree with that. I think the one argument for player safety is that obviously hurry up offenses run more plays, and obviously more plays would equal more injuries. But
is it more plays because they're not substituting, or is it more plays because they're effective? That's the chicken or the egg kind of thing. I don't think it means that the hurry-up offense is just they run so many quick plays that's why they're so effective. It's because they ran plays that give them first downs and move the change. That's what makes a team have more plays. It has nothing to do with how many snaps they get, because if you're ineffective in this hurry-up offense, well, all of a sudden you're three and out and you've wasted no time on the clock. Your defense is gassed.
Well, that's true, but, I mean, there's a reason that, like, 70% of college offenses are now running hurry-up. It's because, you know, people are acting like Bielema and Saban are in the Stone Ages and just don't want to advance. I guarantee you every single defensive coordinator is for some kind of change. The reason that these offenses have proliferated is because they put defenses in a position where they are unable to stop them on a consistent basis because of a rule that is a fine rule until the evolution of the game has forced some sort of change that has to happen. And Shane, the reason I didn't realize this until today, I read something. Apparently it's an odd rule. They can only do changing the game rules every other year, but a safety rule can be implemented every single year. So that's why it's a safety argument this year. And honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if it doesn't pass this year. But this is building momentum to next year, where they can do non-safety related rules where it comes up again and the conversation has kind of started. And now we are talking about, okay, well, the safety thing didn't work, but for the good of the game.
If you want to have a competition committee say that it's the right rule, I would have a little more understanding. But You know, I'm sitting here in South Nashville listening to these blowholes talk about rezoning issues on a property that's just around the corner from me. And they're sitting here wanting to picket and do all of these things on a piece of property that was already zoned for exactly what's being built there today. What they're planning on building is exactly what it's zoned for, but yet they have an issue with it for because they're too stupid to realize that's what the rule was. It was public knowledge. So that's the same thing here. They're making arguments that are just not true. You know, they're saying that traffic's going to increase. It's 20 homes in this subdivision, and traffic's going to increase because of that. No, traffic's going to increase because 5 miles down the road is West Haven, which is just this behemoth subdivision that's putting 20 homes in a month. So their arguments just has no validity. And to me, that's the problem I have with this rule, is that the safety issue to me doesn't hold water.
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure about the safety thing. And to be honest, I don't have a strong stance on this. I'm trying to still kind of figure out where I fall on. I mean, obviously, it suits Alabama much better. And that's, I think, Britton, to answer your question, that's really why Alabama and the rule committee in general is catching so much flack, is because you've got a guy in Air Force's head coach, Calhoun, Troy Calhoun. You know, they run the triple option. They run this, like, weird offense that, you know, only, like, five or six programs run. And then you've got Brett Bielema and Nick Saban. Obviously, they're not on the voting committee, but they were both there. Nick Saban was in attendance, and then Brett Bielema was actually on the discussion panel or whatever. But, you know, my question to this is, and I don't know the answer, is this a thing that, you know, like I said, the game has evolved, and so far, up until now, defenses have evolved with offenses. I mean, that's why we don't see too many people running the wishbone now, because, you know, eventually defensive coordinators were able to find a stop for the wishbone, so offenses advance because, you know, you're trying to beat the defense and, you know, outsmart them. Is this a point in the game where defenses cannot advance due to rules, they cannot stop them? Or is it just something that it's just taking a little bit longer to be able to stop them? I mean, Britton, maybe you could answer that question. I mean, I think that is I think that's more pertinent to me than the safety issue.
That's the true baseline issue, in my opinion. And I agree, Shane, that the safety thing is probably not the way to go about it, but it's just the way the rules are this year, that's the only way to approach it. But yes, I know that offenses evolve, and so therefore it's the nature of the game. It's been that way for 50 years, and so therefore defenses evolve to stop whatever's happening, so then the offenses evolve again. The problem is, I just don't know how much a defense can evolve when an offense is predicated on snapping it when the defense may not even be set. I mean, defense, the nature of the game is that defense has to be able to have some amount of time to see how the offense is lined up, what they're doing, to then align themselves in a way that is most likely to produce a positive outcome for the defense. So all this is, if you go back to another alternative sport comparison, I mean, this is quick pitching in baseball. This is serving in tennis while the opponent is still walking back to the baseline to get set up. This is inbounding the ball in basketball when the defense is still walking back from their huddle. And it's just, I understand that it's legal now, and kudos to offensive coordinators for figuring out a way to evolve. But I think this is more a product of rules that are antiquated than it is offensive geniuses. And again, it's, you know, Nick Saban's catching a ton of flack because, oh, he can't stop the hurry-up offense, so he's pissed and he wants to change the rules. I got news for you. He's done better at stopping it than anyone else in the country. No one can stop it because it's unfair by the rules of the game.
I think you're giving these offensive-minded coaches too much credit. I think it goes back further than that, and it has to do with the defense, but it has to do with rules that are called years ago. I mean, look at the targeting rule that we're talking about being changed. You can't even hit a player anymore. You've limited the way the defense can play, so that's made them ineffective. It has nothing to do with the way the offense is being run with this West Coast offense. because I guarantee you that if they could hit the way they could hit 10 years ago, you wouldn't have the issue, because they're not converting these second and third downs, because they can pass on third down now. They can pass on third and six, third and eight, and they don't have any fear, because they can go right across the middle, and they know that if they hit that wide receiver and he gets just slammed like he would have 5 years ago or 10 years ago, there's a penalty, and they're getting 15 yards either way. So they're going to get the first down off the catch, or they're getting 15 yards. That's the problem with the defense. It has nothing at all to do with West Coast offense. That's just my opinion.
Well, that's true. I mean, every rule change in the past 10 to 15 years has been to the benefit of the offense. So I would say it's not that the hurry up has nothing to do with it, Shane, but I would definitely agree that it's a sort of a confluence of all these different factors that are in the favor of the offense, and the hurry up offense very much takes advantage of that.
It does do that, but because they can go across and they've got it set up just because of that. They have played the West Coast offense to take advantage of the exact rules that have been changed that makes the defense be handcuffed.
Another aspect of this that I haven't really seen talked about in major media is, and again, I just wish, to your point, Shane, that the real reason that this is being proposed would come out and not this player safety thing. But I think that there is a significant desire to help the refs out with these hurry-up offenses. I think that refs are struggling to get in position to make good calls. They're worried more about getting the ball placed so the offense can go than they are about getting guys in position, and they're missing holding calls. They're missing, you know, false starts. They're missing linemen downfield, illegally blocking downfield on pass plays. And I think that's as much of the motivation. You give the refs some time to catch their breath and legislate the game the way that it's supposed to be legislated. I think that's another aspect of this. So, again, it's another non-safety thing, but I just think there are a lot of reasons why something needs to happen.
Give me those reasons in a modified version of this rule, and I'll accept it. But don't come in here and give it to me on the basis that it's player safety. Because I just didn't fall off the turnip truck yesterday. I'm not stupid. I don't see it being a safety issue. But I'm okay with some sort of rule change. You know, give them 5 seconds. If they don't make a defensive change, the ball can be snapped. If there's a defensive change in 5 seconds, they've got to wait 10 seconds to let everybody get set. You mean there is some way to meet in the middle with this rule change to allow defensive substitutions if that's the ultimate goal, without having to say I got to have a ref stand over this ball for 10 seconds.
Yeah, and you know, It also has something to do, you know, Steve Shaw actually talked about this, I think it was 2 years ago now, in the offseason. He's a coordinator for football officials over the SEC, and he talked about this. He said that, you know, every single referee, they were going to have to reevaluate, not like you're talking about, Britton, but just their conditioning skills, because just how the offense goes, and it's relentless. You know, we saw Auburn, once they got a first down, every time, you know, Gus would just start rolling it. And I think that is a legitimate issue, and I think that is one of the things. And obviously, like you said, Britton, it's not going to get passed this year unless they run on player safety. But I think, you know, I'm kind of with Shane that, you know, if we change the reasoning for this, then I might jump on board. I might be, you know, more, you know, I don't know, just more set in stone about this, but Britton, I think you're right. I think that they are missing calls simply because they're not in position, and you know, once this hurry up goes, they're you know, all they're focused on, because you got the center sitting there where the ball is placed and they want to roll it, and you know, that's the first thing that's in the referee's mind is, well, we've got to get this going because it's time to go, you know.
All those are valid reasons for the rule change, not player safety.
Yeah. And but, I honestly think that's just a product of, for whatever this weird rule is about, you can only make non-safety changes every other year, but safety changes you can make every year. Also, I don't know if y'all saw this tweeted out, but it's kind of funny. There's an interview with Ellis Johnson, who is Auburn's current defensive coordinator, and it doesn't have a year on it, but he was the South Carolina defensive coordinator at the time. And
it wasn't that long ago.
The interview is about how he thinks hurry-up offenses are deteriorating college football because it's a completely unfair advantage for the offense. You can't get players on and off the field. You can't get signals out. You can't get set. And his point is that football is becoming more about who has the best signal system or verbiage system, not about who can block and tackle better.
It's all about Omaha.
Yeah, exactly. So that's just kind of a funny. I also saw another article. I can't remember who now who wrote it, but this committee, sent out surveys to like every D1 coaching staff, and basically whether they were for or against some kind of slowdown rule was split right down the middle. And you know that's just because it was offense versus defense, because defense knows how unfair it is and that they can't stop these offenses. But you're right. It is not a safety issue, or at least not probably enough of one to cause a change. But we just can't have the other debate until next year, I guess, because of the rules.
What I want to see them do is not rush to judgment. And let's thoughtfully think through the best way to approach this. Because if we want to change subjects and still stay on rule changes, let's talk about a rule they rushed to judgment on last year and realize now they've put their tail between their legs and it's up to be completely changed. And that's what you were talking about, Nick's the targeting rule, where last year was if you got hit with a targeting rule, it was 15 yards no matter what. The only difference was the player ejected or not ejected. And now it's going to be that you can just pull the flag up and it's a no call is what's basically being proposed. Is that correct? Is that the way I read it?
Yeah, it is.
Right.
And so, you know, that's one where they rushed to the player safety. That was a player safety call. They rushed to this call to put it in place to make this rule change. And we kind of talked about this before we even started this podcast tonight. But towards the end of the season, I know there were calls being made where they thought it was targeting. They go back to the replay, and it clearly was nowhere close to being targeting. And they uphold the call because they don't want to look bad. They want to save face and say, yeah, he was targeting, he's ejected. Where if this rule was in place then, they would have picked up the flag.
Yeah, it's funny. You use the word, I don't remember what exactly your words were, but it was something about thinking things through and making sure you're making the right decision, which the NCAA seems to be incapable of doing. But when it comes to these safety issues, the NFL and the NCAA,
they're knee-jerk reactions.
It's like knee-jerk. Yeah, absolutely. I'm scared to death of litigation, maybe. I don't know what it is, but it's like, well, we got to do something. Let's do it now and not really evaluate it. So now we're seeing common sense applied to the targeting rule, which I think most people can agree in principle is a good rule, because you can't fine these players, obviously. So you got to do something to take that hit out of the game, but to have it where you can't overturn the penalty, yet you can't overturn the ejection, was just complete moronic bullshit. Yeah. They're applying common sense to that, and it's the most common sense thing in the history of the world. It just took the NCAA a year to get to it.
Yeah, and I'm afraid that's what would happen if this other rule came into place. It's like,
yeah,
I don't get it. And you know, unlike the NFL, there's no preseason, so you can't say, hey, let's go test the waters with a preseason game and see how this works. Because the NFL does that with certain rule changes. They'll try them out in preseason one year to see how it affects the play. But, you know, that rule, they got it right. I don't think you're going to find anyone, whether it's someone like us, whether it's a coach, whether it's a player, whether it's the real media, that doesn't think that if targeting needs to be taken care of in college football, it needs to be mitigated and reduced. And so it's the right thing to have a call for targeting. Was it the right thing to eject the guy regardless? That was just stupid. And I don't know how you sat there in a room full of somewhat educated men. I would hope they were all college-educated men making these rules last year when this came out. It's like, well, what happens if it really wasn't targeting? You're going to cost this team 15 yards? Wouldn't that have been a good conversation to logically have last year instead of making yourself look like a fool for the last year? You're right. The NCAA they think so often, and it's knee-jerk. I think we nailed it right there. It's such a knee-jerk reaction. It's like coming home and seeing something all over the floor and telling your kids to go to timeout and realizing that you turn around and it's your dog that's covered in the spaghetti or something. It's just And you know, as a parent, I could say I could do that. I could be knee jerk in situations like that. But when you sit down and you calmly think through a situation, which they have had the opportunity, it wasn't being thrown in the middle of this and saying, "Okay, you're in the middle of this game. What do we need to do now?" kind of thing. They had time right. to logically sit in a room and discuss, and they still couldn't come up with this answer that they're proposing this year. That's what's ridiculous.
Yeah, I agree, and I honestly, because of that, and even though this proposed slowdown rule is really unpopular, I kind of will be surprised if it's not passed, just because of the whole knee-jerk safety reaction. And even though I'm for the rule, we still all agree that it's really not a safety issue. I just really won't be surprised at all if it passes because of what we just talked about.
You bring up a good point there. All of a sudden, you got a bunch of silly things that go on that we don't have control. They don't sit and logically work through this.
Yep.
Nick,
let me ask you this. Talking about that, I'm kind of straying on the side now that, you know, if it took another year, would it be worth it to get the rule right? Because I'm still not set. I think they're, you know, I'm kind of on the side where something should be done, but I'm not sure if it's this 10-second runoff. And they've talked about this interesting thing that they would have a mandatory defensive sub on first down, which really doesn't make sense because obviously they reset the chains. If you can't sub when they reset the chains, like, I don't know what you're doing. But should we – I think the talks are good. I think we've addressed that here. But if it took another year where we could chop off the player safety deal and not push it through in that way and maybe revisit this next year – Would we be, excited about that? Because I'm not sure, you know, like we're talking about. I know the 10-second rule allows you to sub, but does it fix the problem, you know?
Right. That's a good – I mean, that could be someone's ulterior motive into having it proposed this year, maybe knowing that the safety rule isn't – or the safety justification isn't enough to actually – pass it, but it kind of starts that conversation and builds momentum to next year where people can have the conversation that we've just had about how things have really skewed towards the offense and something might need to be done to even it back out a little bit. That's a fair point. I think that kind of thing happens in politics all the time where
it happens in the NFL. It's doing that right now with the extra point. I mean, all indications right. are, I mean, that was all you heard talk about, I don't know, 3 weeks ago or so, was that they're proposing possibly doing away with the extra point. Well, that's all kind of died down now. But, you know, that was Goodell's way of just kind of throwing that out there, seeing what really is going to happen and what the temperature was before a decision was being made. Now he can kind of tweak it and bring it back next year and make it right. I don't think the NCAA operates that way, though. I don't think they operate with that kind of mentality to be able to say that's the right thing to do, is to let's kind of see what's out there. What are our opposition believe? What is our pros believe? And where can we find a middle ground? They don't act that way.
That's very true. They kind of rule with an iron fist.
With lots of holes in it. An iron fist with lots of holes.
Exactly. I was going to make a similar analogy. They rule with an iron fist, except for in the instances where they really should drop the hammer on someone and they seem to be incapable of it. But, yeah, I don't know. It's interesting, and like I've said, I'm for some kind of change just because I want defense to still be as much a part of the game as offense. But the player safety thing is debatable at best.
Well, because we've not gotten any indication as to how it's a player safety issue.
Right. Well, and I did see a tweet right before we got on that – there's a rumor that the University of North Carolina, and I don't remember who else now, but someone else have been compiling some kind of hurry-up offense injury statistics and may present that at whenever this actual vote is on this proposed rule. But, I mean, that was a tweet, and who knows if it's true, and who knows what kind of statistics it would be, whether it's positive or negative for one side or the other. I have no idea. But if there is real hard data that shows anything, good or bad, I mean, at least that would be something.
That's something more than they're providing now, other than right. just rumors. So, Well, let's talk. Anything else we want to discuss on those two topics for rule changes, football?
I know you, Vanderbilt. You referred to real media at one point. Does that mean that we're not real media?
I don't. I'm not credentialed.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not either. Okay.
I guess Nick's credentialed. He gets.
Yeah,
he gets.
Sometimes that's debatable. Yeah.
That's the only reason we keep him around. He lends us some form of credibility, actually.
But that whole credentialed, that's just a farce that major media is able to stronghold all of that anyway. So, bloggers and podcasters and stuff, we're not looked at like we have a voice or that we know what we're talking about. But I think we had a very good discussion on that topic, and I would put that up against anything else that ESPN would do.
Absolutely, and we're better looking, too.
I know I am.
I mean, and plus, who on ESPN broadcasts from a dorm room? I mean,
they don't have children's art in their background.
That's true.
Or a screaming baby.
Dogs barking, I mean, doors slamming, wives yelling. I mean, come on now. We're big time.
Level of realism that's just irreplaceable with our production, you know.
Yeah. Well, we also don't have their budget to keep all those things from happening.
Yet.
Good. I like that. Yes. Yet. Anything else on the rule changes? I think we've done a good job covering both sides. And I took a stance. I didn't know where I was going to go with my stance until you started talking, Britton. You made you made me formulate my opinion. Believe it, if I had to choose, though, that's exactly the side I would choose now, based on what the way you started your conversation. It's like, this doesn't make sense. But anything else, I did see today a tweet, and I didn't get to read the details, but I guess one of Derek Mason's new coaches got arrested for a DUI?
Defensive line coach.
Defensive line coach. So welcome to Nashville. You know, they need to be – that's something that a coaching staff should just be mandatory, is that you need to have somebody on your staff to say, okay, these are the trouble spots. These are the speed traps. These are the DUI traps. Because every city's got one.
There's got to be a – always with professional athletes and coaches when this happens, I'm like, you can afford – if not a driver, at least a taxi. Like, I understand, I don't understand it, but normal people who don't have $500,000 jobs, maybe they don't want to pay $70 for a taxi. But dadgummit, when you're making that much money, just get a taxi.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
call the freshman kicker to pick you up.
Uber's giving 2 free weeks right now, right? I mean, but what would be great is you call Uber to come pick you up, and it's like your third string defensive lineman or something trying to pick up some extra cash, driving daddy's car. That would be awesome. All right. Well, we have basketball going on. So there's actually a sport that's being played right now.
Debatable if that sport is being played.
There's a winner and a loser, and there's a time clock, and there's a score, and there's officials. But you're right. I don't know if there's real ball being played. It's just I forgot who I was listening to over the weekend, and they were debating, is there more than two teams in the SEC that could go to the NCAA? You know, at the beginning of the season, we were hoping for five, but, you know, they brought up some good points. It's like, wow, it's just dreadful what's become of the SEC.
Well, I think in Lenardi's most recent, from February 17th, which is yesterday, he's only got two, unless I'm not seeing another one, but he's only got Florida and Kentucky. And, I mean, the thing is – even if a team goes on a team like Ole Miss or Georgia goes on a run here and wins 12, 13 conference games, winning games in the league right now just doesn't matter that much because they're all so bad. Unless one of the wins is Kentucky or Florida, it's like, well, so what? You just beat another pretty bad team, so that's not helping you much.
Yeah, and, you know, this is something that I referred to a lot you know, riding early in the season for Alabama is for the first time ever, it seemed like Alabama was going to be in a position where they would, you know, decide their, or, you know, be in charge of their own destiny, because, you know, we've seen Alabama before win 20 games.
They were, and they gave it away.
Yeah, and that is true, and that's what I'm getting to. But, you know, for years past, Alabama would finish second or third in the SEC and even win the West one year and be denied of the NCAA tournament because the conference just wasn't up to standards. Like, these conference wins don't mean anything unless, you know, the only way that conference games in the SEC actually mean anything is if you lose them, because then, you know, you're obviously...
That's a bad loss.
Yeah, every loss is a bad loss in the SEC. But, you know, for once, Alabama had this extremely, you know, right now they're sitting at number two strength of schedule in the country because of their non-conference schedule. They played Wichita State. They played, obviously, they got Florida on the schedule. They've got Kentucky. But then you look at some of the other teams they played. They played Duke, all these other teams. And you're exactly right. I mean, what is SEC basketball giving you right now? I mean, we're talking about two, maybe three teams going in. I'm looking at Jerry Palm right now. He's got Tennessee as a first-round play-in game to the 12th seed as the third SEC team. And, you know, I'm watching the Tennessee-Georgia game as we're doing it here. I mean, they're just playing their way out of it every single day, you know.
And that's amazing that anyone still has them in any capacity.
Did you say they have Georgia as the play-in team or Tennessee?
No, they have Tennessee. Tennessee and Georgia are playing right now.
But Tennessee is up on Georgia, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, by 12.
I'm watching it too much, so.
I was just trying to check at that, actually. It's like they're up by 12. So, I mean, all of a sudden, you know, you were talking about Georgia. They were on the heels of trying to make a run, and now they're losing to Tennessee. It's just like nobody can decide if they want to win a game.
Yeah.
And it's bad basketball, too. I mean, it's maybe it is just because all the teams are mediocre, so there's nothing really at stake. That's got to be part of the problem, but – when I sit down to watch a game, they're not very skilled. It's just ugly basketball, especially compared to, you know, the Syracuses of the world. And of course, compared to higher level like NBA, there's just, to me, it's just ugly. And I can hardly watch an entire game right now, unless it's a Florida or a Kentucky. But even then, those teams are playing crappy teams, so it's not really fun to watch them beat up on these crappy teams. It's just a rough year.
Except for Saturday when they played each other.
Yeah, that was the one, like, real college basketball game in the conference this whole year so far.
You might think it was real.
Well, yeah. Sorry.
It's all right. Now, we Kentucky had every chance to win that game.
What'd you think about that technical?
I'd like to know what he said.
I would too.
I mean, I go back when it was all kind of gray and not really clear on what was happening. I just hearken back to the movie Bull Durham. You know, there's a surefire way to get yourself ejected as a coach from baseball, and that's calling the ref a CS. Do you remember that scene? That kept running through my mind. Maybe he called him one of those. I don't know.
And let me just correct something I said. I don't know if Mike Slive is paying Jerry Palm off or not, but in his latest prediction, he has Missouri, Tennessee, Florida, and Kentucky in, and the Tennessee's the highest seed at 12, or the lowest, however that works. They're the highest seed at 12. You've got Missouri in at a 10 seed, and then, of course, Florida up for grabs at a number one seed, and then he's got Kentucky at 5. So.
And actually, now that you say that, Lenardi has Missouri in too. I still forget that they're in the SEC, I'll be honest.
It's also so. Like, back to Calipari, it's also like that joke. Can you eject me for what I'm thinking?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think you're a... You know, and you just tell them, you know, maybe that it had to be something like that, but it was just like out of the blue. And he was at the, from what I, Matt Jones, who does Kentucky Sports Radio, he tweeted, I was right there. Calipari was at the other end of the bench when this technical got called. So even he didn't see or hear what went down and why that technical came out of the blue. But, I think Dick Vitale said this could change the course of this ball game, and it really did. I mean,
oh, it definitely did.
It was a different ball game from that point on.
Yeah,
I hated it because I needed to see Kentucky split against Florida, and I don't know if they can win in the O-Dome.
So this is kind of related, but somewhat of a different tangent. Did y'all see the news where Adam Silver, the new NBA commish, says that he wants to do away with the one and done rule and up it to 2 or 3 years? I don't know if y'all saw that announcement, but that would be, obviously it would benefit all of college basketball, but something's got to give, because I mean the SEC is bad right now, but I think there's just a general lack of interest around the entire country compared to several years ago for college basketball, because you feel like you're learning a new team every year. You know, it's hard to have your villains and your heroes that you remember from 2 and 3 years ago.
Did he have
so
a?
I'm hopeful that will change.
Do you have a proposal on how to correct it?
He didn't really go into any detail, because apparently the next collective bargaining in the NBA isn't until like 2018. But he was asked what his kind of goals for change are for putting his stamp on, you know, the league as the new guy, and that was one of the things he mentioned. That was about all the detail he gave, though.
Well,
and you look at this, that rule change, you think about this, and, you know, Kentucky is at, maybe Shane, you can probably attest to this more, but they're actually a little bit older than they have been, you know, especially, you know, when they were starting five freshmen. You know, they've got, what, Willie Cauley-Stein, that is a sophomore, I think, or a junior, a couple guys that have stayed multiple years now. And somebody tweeted this out, that Patrick Young had started more games in his career than all of the starters for Kentucky combined, you know, and that's
wow.
Where we are today is Florida is made up of these guys that seem like they've been there forever. And you look at Tennessee and Jordan McRae and Jarnell Stokes and these guys that, you know, I feel like I was like 10 when I was watching them play. And then, you know, I look at Kentucky and I can't even name their starting five. And I, you know, I follow college basketball on a daily basis. So
I get that. I mean, the only rule change that could work is to me the baseball rule. And we've all talked about how that's a good rule for basketball. If you're
yeah.
that good, they're able to go straight in. If not, you got to give them 2 or 3 years. And that's what's going to happen. You're going to lose 3 or 4 or 5 players every year, maybe. But also you're going to see the NBA be a little more selective, because even when that was the case, I mean, you had Kevin Garnett, you've got Kobe Bryant, you've got LeBron James, but you just didn't have it happen every year.
Yeah, there were way more busts than there were success stories. You know, there was Sebastian Telfair and guys like that who you've never heard of again since they went.
But there wasn't that many touted, you know, great players coming out as high school seniors.
Oh, right.
That actually went into the draft. I mean, they were they became very rare commodities. You didn't see it happen. You might see one, maybe two, a season. But coming into their freshman year in college, all of a sudden there's 6 that could have went pro. You know, it gets inflated so much because they have that potential talent. But if they were to all of a sudden, now you've got to go to the NBA, would that equal and be the same? All of a sudden their draft stock would drop because they're basically 18. They don't have the physicality. I don't know. Did you watch the Saturday UK Florida game? Did y'all watch the whole game?
I watched the second half. I didn't see the first.
Did you see the piece where they showed the Florida players with their shirts off as freshmen and then as seniors?
Oh, no.
Oh, my. Just the huge physical difference that they had in bulk and weight and just mass. And so, you know, that just drives it home that at 18, you just don't have that yet. And so
right.
It becomes more difficult. So your NBA teams aren't going to rate you as high as you think you would go right now. And so you're not going to have that. So you're going to see more of those players come. I think it would be great for basketball. You're going to have a logjam for a year or two. So you're going to have a team like Kentucky or Kansas that's going to basically have a draft class of nothing, you
right.
know, 1 year, because they've got such a logjam at that point of players that can't go at that point at all of a sudden. But that's not a bad thing for those programs. All they got to do is reload the year after with a bunch of new talent. So.
Well, it'd be good for college basketball, too, because you would know people. You would know teams. There would be fan interest besides the diehard fans. And, Shane, that was an interesting point about if they went to that baseball rule, I think you would also have less of the guys that could come straight out of high school, because they would be, rather than being evaluated against other high school kids or guys who have played 1 year of college basketball, they're being evaluated against guys who have played 3 years of major college basketball.
That's exactly
bigger,
what I was trying to mean,
stronger,
yes.
Have some skins on the wall. So, yeah, that's, I hadn't really thought about that, but that's a good reason why it would kind of work, and only the phenoms like LeBron and Kobe would make the leap successfully, and the rest would go to college because they wouldn't get drafted, because you're going to draft a Scotty Wilbekin over, you know, an 18-year-old kid who's only played 6A ball.
Yeah, so and all of a sudden, and they need that year or two or three in college to be on that level at that point. So I'm excited for that, if that's in the pipe, if he's got that planned. Now, if he can get the Players Association on board with that, might be another thing.
Yeah.
Because that's his real issue. It's now Players Association issues.
Yeah,
with
definitely.
The NBA, so. And that'll be interesting, but, you know, like you said, that's another 4 years away or something, so.
Yeah, I think it was 17 or 18, so.
What else? Oh, baseball. That's the other thing we got to talk about. Opening day was this weekend. Valentine's Day, I think, was actual opening day for college sports. For some folks in the SEC, that means a lot. Others, not so much. I know, Nick, you actually braved the cold and the weather to go watch some Alabama baseball.
Yeah, you know, Shane, we've been talking about, I mean, obviously Alabama, if you know anything about Alabama weather, you know, it could be 30 one day and 80 the next, but you know, we talked about on the previous episode, we had 5 or 10 minutes where we talked about the snow that we've been getting. Well, it's kind of interesting setup, and we had a pretty good conversation before the podcast here that Britton wrote, brought up the question, you know, starting on February 14th across the nation, what do all these teams do? You know, you think of some of the Oregon states and the Oregons. I mean, there's top baseball programs that are stuck, you know, essentially above the Mason-Dixon line, and they're frozen in for another 2 or 3 months. And, you know, that is what they do. They come down here to Alabama. They go to tournaments in Fort Myers, Florida, and where Kentucky played, and Wilmington, you know, pretty much anywhere that it's above 30. And I had the privilege to speak. Alabama played University or St. Louis University. And, you know, that's not too far north, but they were expecting sleet that night. And it's kind of interesting. Friday night, opening night, Alabama, we endured a 2-hour rain delay. It was dropped like 15 degrees while we were there, ended up being 40. And then the next 2 days, you've got shorts weather, you know, like 65, 70 and sunny. But it was fun. You know, Alabama ranked in the top 25 for the first time in several years. And this is really shaping up to be a big-time SEC baseball season. You look at Mississippi State, always up there in the top 10. LSU got some great guys coming back. I mean, the list goes on and on. Kentucky got a win against number one Virginia on opening day, I think it was. But, Shane, you brought this up, and I hadn't even heard about this, and I really wish Blair was here to talk about it. But
he was so excited about this.
Yes, I know, and he just loves baseball. I think he lives for baseball right after the Egg Bowl. Wouldn't you say, Shane? I mean, all the way up to now. So
that's a good assessment.
This is just such a such a great story here, and this is kind of a short recap from SB Nation's MSU blog. But essentially, so MSU was supposed to play Hofstra, which is up on, in Long Island in New York. They were, you know, looking to come down to Starkville, get a three-game set, get out of the cold weather and everything. And it turns out they have gotten just an extreme amount of snow, even more than, I guess, Long Island normally expects. And Hofstra was snowed in. They couldn't get down. No way they could fly out or, you know, bus out or anything. And instead of MSU sitting around just saying, hey, well, we're going to have to cancel the first week, they actually threw together this pretty interesting schedule. And, Shane, you pointed out it was against a team from the SoCon in Western Carolina, which is actually a pretty decent program. They play good ball down in the SoCon. And they actually threw this together in, like, it seems like hours. I haven't really researched it that much, but the MSU coaching staff was very proactive. They scoured the country to find a team to play.
That was also, you know, that also had the same predicament, because wasn't Western Carolina's opponent snowed in as well?
Yeah, and you know, it's just weird, and that's one of the things about baseball is, you know, we've got, you know, it starts in mid February, and we go all the way up to the College World Series, which is pushing towards, you know, summer. But I don't know. It was a good weekend overall. Just a quick recap: Alabama, you know, won the series. I think almost every SEC team won their series. Kentucky got a big win against Virginia, but pretty much there. If you look at the top 25 with those SEC teams, none of them really changed. If anything, they were able to move up. But you know, especially with a mediocre college basketball season, it's fun to look forward to baseball. Well, and, you know, honestly, there's nothing better than sitting out in good weather, watching a good baseball game, just relaxing.
Drinking cold beer. Oh, wait.
That's, yeah, I agree.
That's sunflower good. Seeds. Yeah. We'll go with that, right?
Yeah, it's college baseball. Wait, unless you're in the left field lounge, and then it's Katie bar the door over there in Mississippi State. You know, one thing that needs to be looked at, and I don't know if we've talked about this before with baseball, because we talk so little about it on the podcast, but realistically, this is a sport that needs to get pushed back 2 more weeks. I mean, they're starting their first game in college is probably before pitchers and catchers are reporting for the major leagues. Or if not, they're right there when the pitchers and catchers are reporting. And so you're looking at a huge advantage for the Southern schools, because they do have that warmer weather. They're able to get out and practice in the actual elements instead of hitting BP at an inside cage or something like that if you're a Northern team. And I think that all has to do with the way that – don't they have to finish the games before July, because that's the way the calendar year flips in the college sports ranks or something? I don't know.
I think so. I don't really know the details on that. But I think there is an end date where they have to, you know, there's a reason why they start so early.
And so with the way schools are today and programs and stuff, there should be a way that they could get this set up and get this pushed back and accommodate folks, because kids can go to school all year round. They don't have to have the summer off, or they can do the schedules in such a way that allow these baseball players to do that. It's just, I don't know. To me, that's just one thing that if we're talking about this, apparently is the rule change episode. That's something else that needs to get looked at, something in baseball. We've talked about a rule change for all three sports tonight.
Well, it's kind of the same problem that I think college basketball has. You know, they start their season, and when they started, all anyone cares about is football. And now football is finally over. People who aren't diehard basketball fans are finally starting to really focus on basketball as we get towards a stretch run and tournament play. And then right when that focus starts, they're starting baseball. So pushing it back would also help with having more of the season available when people are done with the other sport that's probably more important, which is basketball.
Yeah, because we'll talk basketball up until the first week of April.
Right.
And then if you look at that, once you get into April, now all of a sudden you got spring games for college football.
Yeah,
and so, that's true. You know, we get another 3 or 4 weeks of heavy football. This has been our past demo on the podcast. You know, that you get another 3 or 4 weeks of heavy football talk and recap of basketball and NBA draft coming up and NFL draft of your college prospects. And now you're all of a sudden in mid-May, and now you can finally talk about baseball because football's died down and just in time to get started till, you know, mid-July comes around. So they only have that two-month window where they have the spotlight, and, you know, why not take advantage of that and push it into July some more? Nick, you
got
any?
We should be running the NCAA.
There we go.
Yeah, why are we sitting here? I mean.
That's a good question. Listeners, if you like what we say, make us run the NCAA. We'll all take that pay increase for the headaches.
Yeah, sure.
Nick, you got anything before we close up shop?
You know, not really. Obviously, we've got baseball. Softball's big at Alabama, but just wanted to plug this. This is something that our editor Tony's doing over at Bama Hammer. Obviously, in the off season, you got plenty of time to prep for football season, and Tony's putting this little list together. It's just a page on the site. He's kind of a big bar guy, kind of a foodie sort of, and he's putting together this list of kind of every single place in as many states as we can find that you can watch an Alabama football game on a Saturday. You know that it's going to be on. I mean, obviously, you know, Georgia, surrounding areas are different. But I'm just looking at this list here. You've got places in Boston and places in New York and out in Denver and just all over the country. We kind of forget sometimes. Obviously, you guys are up in Tennessee. I'm down here in, right in the center of it in Tuscaloosa. You kind of forget, you know, the SEC has quite a long reach. And, you know, Shane, you even said this. We talk about this all the time with Vandy. Most people come in, they leave. That's why they never can get too big of a fan support right there in Nashville. So, I don't know. It's just interesting to check it out. And, hey, if you've maybe relocated and you're in Dallas or the D.C. area or something and you're wanting to catch some Alabama games, it's just kind of fun to browse around. So.
Sweet. I have to go check that out. Britton, anything you got before I close it up? We lost your audio. He's all lounged back, just talking away. Still nothing. Still nothing. What'd you do? Unbelievable.
I think he just decided he didn't want to talk to us anymore.
He's done. All right. Well, guys, I want to thank everyone for listening in. I think this has been a really good spirited podcast. So we appreciate you listening. Go check us out. Like us on iTunes. Give us some good positive comments and feedback. We appreciate that. That helps us keep up towards the top of SEC sports in the podcast. I know last time I looked, we were right behind some places called ESPN and CBS in SEC sports when we were on iTunes. So I don't know what those two guys do on a regular basis, but you know, I'm pretty happy with being right up there. So we want to thank everyone for downloading and listening and subscribing on iTunes and anywhere else you can get a podcast. So do that for us. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, everywhere else on social media. And with that, we're going to call this podcast done.